We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
On the Wolfpack Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Play ball!
Welcome to the Nevada Wolfpack Baseball Podcast. Here's your host, Josh Sushon.
Hi again, everyone. Welcome to episode 7 of Howling with the Pack. This is a podcast about the Nevada Wolfpack baseball team. I'm your host, Josh Sushon. Hope you enjoyed the last 2 weeks when we had some serious Major League Baseball star power. Last week, we had Chad Qualls, who spent 14 years in the major leagues after he was a two-year standout for the Wolfpack. And the week before that, we had head coach TJ Bruce and his longtime college teammate and friend, Troy Tulowitzki, join us. But this is a big week for this year's Wolfpack baseball team. They are hosting first place San Diego State this weekend at home. And then the week after that, they're hosting second place UNLV. So we kind of want to rein it back and talk about this year's team. And so we bring in head coach TJ Bruce. Congratulations, taking 2 out of 3 over the weekend at Air Force. TJ, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Josh. Thanks. Yeah, it was a good weekend. It was the first series win in my tenure at Air Force, actually. And so, that was great. And then anytime you get a weekend on the road is always good. But then a top 40 RPI team as well. I mean, that's a huge deal for us down the road, I think.
Yeah, it was an interesting weekend where I think you and I both go into it thinking it's Air Force, you got the wind, it's 7,000 something feet elevation, and these could be some really high scoring games. And while there was a few balls that may have gotten aided by the altitude, for the most part, it was a fairly normal weekend of baseball. We actually played 3 games, and the longest time of game was exactly 3 hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I told you on, I think, the first game Saturday, if you can get out, I mean, 5, 6, 7 runs, you got a chance to win the game. And I think we nailed it. I think we've pitched the best that I've seen there over the weekend, especially at that place. We gave up 6, gave up 7, and then we gave up the last game. I think we gave up 3 or 4, whatever that was. So I think that was huge. I think our pitching did a fantastic job. And of course, right, you don't know what's ever going to happen. That wind was going. I think it helped. You know, Air Force did move home plate back 15 feet. So that was kind of a new park for us as well, with the new additions they made with the turf and the padding. And then, of course, I think that it was a game changer moving home plate back.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's look ahead this weekend. I was asking around to see if we could get more people at Boccoli Park this weekend, if we could get the, you know, the general public in addition to the friends and family. And unfortunately, no, and that's a bummer because I feel like this is when baseball gets really fun. You're 3.5 games out. You've got the first place team coming into town for 3 games. You took 2 out of 3 from them. I guess it's going to be 3 weeks ago by the time we get to this weekend. What are just your thoughts about this opportunity that your team has? You kind of dug yourselves a hole, but you've dug back out of the hole. And now, you know, you don't have a great chance, but you do have some type of opportunity now.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you still got life. And I think that's something that at this time of year, you know, heading into May, I think it's a lot like professional baseball. Heading into September, you just want an opportunity and a chance to still be in the mix, and you want people to still be talking about you. And I think that's what we've done. You're right. We've dug ourselves a hole. We've lost some tough games that we should have won just due to mistakes and this and that. But I think going to San Diego State on the road 3 weeks ago was a huge, huge deal for us for the weekend. I think it's still their first series, their only series loss on the year. You know, our guys did a great job, especially after losing game one. And then we backed it up with Air Force going on the road. So you want to be playing good now. You know, I'd be a little worried if we played really good in March and early April. But you want to be playing good now. And I think, you know, we're getting into that point. I think we got a long way to go still. San Diego State at home, UNLV at home. So you got the teams 1 and 2 in the standings right ahead of us. We got 6 games with them, and, you know, we'll know where we stand pretty good after this weekend. In my opinion, we're either going to be out of it or you'll be pretty close to being taken over that top spot. So we'll see what happens. And I think it's huge for our community. It's huge for our players.
I feel like for every baseball coach, regardless of whether it's pro ball, the majors, college, once you can settle into roles in the bullpen or just knowing these are the guys and these are the guys that we're going to bring in at a certain time. And I feel like over the last couple of weeks, you've been able to do that where, you know, you're going to go to Goose either in the 6th or the 7th inning of the first game that you've got a lead. And you know that you've got Cochran who can go a couple of innings in either game 2 or game 3. And I think the development of Cade Morris has been huge. How are you just feeling in terms of these are our guys in the bullpen that we can use, and it's just a matter of getting X number of innings from our starters to be able to turn it over to our late inning guys?
Yeah, the role thing is a big deal. I know some guys in our game don't believe in it. I know a lot of them that do. My 2 head coaches prior that I worked for believe in roles, and that was huge. I think it's as huge for the players or for the coaches as it is for the players. They know they're starting to get a feel for when they could go in the game. You know, right now for us, especially going to Goose, as we've done pretty early, every game for us is game 7, really. You know, we're going to get to him in the 6th if we have to. And it's a little combination of roles and establishing roles. And it's a little bit of Joe Maddon's new way of doing the bullpen is we're going to go to the guy where the game's at. You know, we don't really have time to wait till the 8th to get to this person or wait till the 9th to get to that person. And that's kind of what we've done. I do think the key is the starters. I think you're always as good as your starting pitching. It doesn't matter if you can hit 330 or not. You're always as good as your starting pitching. And our guys have been better over the course of time. I think they've stepped up with the loss of Sharks for sure. And I think they just keep growing. And like I said, the good news is they just keep getting better as the more they keep playing. So that's a huge positive.
To me, one of the fun parts about being around college baseball is how the bullpen is used differently. Yeah, it'd be great if you had 3 guys who throw 99. You bring 1 in the 7th, 1 in the 8th, 1 in the 9th, but that's just not the case. And Goose kind of reminds me, it's like Raleigh Fingers back in the 70s or like a Dan Quisenberry. Actually, Quisenberry's probably an even better fit just because of the arm slot that no, we're just going to go to him in the 6th or 7th and hopefully he can finish the game. And if not, well, then maybe we'll figure out the 9th inning, but you know, we're not going to have like a different guy for each inning, which I think is fun to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I think ideally you would love to have, you know, a 7th, an 8th and a 9th. And, you know, the 9th obviously can be available for 4 outs if need be. I think you would love to have it. We had that a few years ago with Bonifant and Ford. You know, in the 7th through the 9th, those 2 guys were in the game in some capacity. So, but we don't really have that yet. I think we're still growing into that role. But as you can see, you know, if we're going to go with what the game's telling us too, I think that's a huge deal. And I think that's part of coaching is the numbers say one thing, but what's the game and what's the swings telling you, you know, should we take this guy out? Should we leave him in? Are they seeing the ball? And I think, you know, I think the other thing is, as you're starting to see a little bit, you know, Purcell, who hasn't pitched much, you know, has pitched more lately, you know, but the numbers are telling us he's just as good as a left-handed pitcher, you know, just because of what he can do. And so you'll start seeing him in a different role. I know you saw him in that role at Texas a few weeks ago. You'll start seeing him play a little different role because the numbers do speak. They don't paint the whole picture, but they tell a little bit of the story. And as we start following the numbers and these guys start getting at bats up, we'll start kind of mixing and matching a little bit more to the best of our ability. But, you know, when we need the game closed out, then, you know, you're going to see Goose or Cochran at some point.
All right. So this weekend, next weekend are huge, but I also wanted to get your thoughts as you just continue to build this program and look ahead to future seasons. And before we started recording this, I was reading this article on Nevada Sportsnet. Shout out to Chris Murray, who does a phenomenal job. And Mountain West Conference basketball teams had 58 players transfer out of the conference or into the conference. And the NCAA has passed a new rule that student athletes no longer have to sit out 1 year as a transfer. They will be eligible immediately. As a student athlete yourself, you transferred from a JC to Texas Tech, and then you transferred to Long Beach State, where you had to sit out 1 year. You're very good friends with Eric Musselman. He built the Wolfpack into a dominant team with transfers. Steve Alford is doing the same thing now. How would you compare what baseball can do compared to what we've seen men's basketball do when it comes to transfers?
I think that men's basketball has laid the blueprint a little bit for the transfer portal. And, you know, I used to talk to Mus about it all the time. You know, I don't know. I think it's still uncharted waters for baseball to a degree. You know, I think in terms of the longevity, I don't know if it can be done at a high rate that men's basketball is doing it, you know, to where you're bringing in 5, 6, 7 guys. You know, because then you just end up recycling guys. I think it's more, you know, I think it's more for the win now type stuff. But we'll see. We'll see over time with baseball as the one-time transfer rule goes into play. I mean, I was in full disagreement of it. I'll go on the record and keep saying it. I don't like it. I think it's going to kill mid-majors in our sport. I think, you know, the argument is, well, we have a chance to land somebody. Well, yeah, but you also have a chance to lose 5 people to landing 1 or 2. And I think it's going to hurt mid majors in baseball. I really do. So we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, it's been fun to follow Mus do that and Steve, you know, how Steve's doing it. It's just, you're always trying to take bits and pieces from those guys and other programs and other sports to kind of see if it can work. Like I said, I don't know if you can have 9 transfers on your field. You know, for us, I think that there's a little bit of continuity there that may not work. I'm not sure. I don't know. I think we're still all trying to wait and see how that plays out. You know, like I said, I was a transfer in 2004, but I was one guy. I was the only guy that transferred in. I played right away. I didn't have to sit out. There again, I was the fish out of water walking into – I just had to follow suit essentially, yeah. You know, and I don't know if you brought in 9 of them, 10 of them, geez, I just don't know. And I feel like the complexity of baseball, the way it is with, at least on the West, with how we do things, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but you know, we got to get on board with it regardless of how I feel about it. It's where the game's going. And we're on the transfer portal just about every day. And, trying to find out the right fit, because I think that's important too, is, you know, one guy can make an impact, good and bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of it is doing the legwork on the front end before we even bring these guys in on a trip or even bring them into your program to find out, you know, what they can do, what can't they do, you know, and most importantly, they're going to be a good teammate and buy into what we're doing, you know, cause you have to be here 3 years or you have to be 21 by a certain age before you go into professional baseball. Basketball doesn't have that. They have one and done. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's really a 9-month rental. You don't have that for baseball. You got to be here for at least two years. And so you just want to make sure you make the right decision for them and they make the right decision for them and their program.
You know, one of the things that that I think has been interesting for me to follow this year, when I look both at our roster and the roster of other teams, is just how hard it is for a true freshman to play. I mean, there's a handful of guys, whether it's with the Wolfpack or whether it's with the teams that we've played, who play as a freshman and who have an impact. But most of the time, when I'm going through the bios of guys, it's junior college transfer or it's someone who barely played as a freshman and had to work their way in. And I think that's one of the things that makes baseball unique as well. It's like, it's really hard to play as a true freshman in this sport. And that's going to be the case even more so with the 4-year seniors and the 5-year seniors because of what happened in the pandemic. So I wonder if you can just speak to just the rarity of it is to find a true freshman and how that also might impact transfers.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's hard for any program, I think, for to have a true freshman play. That's the first thing. And I think, like you said, the game's different. I even think the 4-year guys the 2-year JC guys, it's tough to come in and play right away. But the freshmen coming in, I think it can impact the transfers because, you know, you're bringing in the freshmen, you want to bring them along and that's how I think you build longevity in programs is by playing these guys. And you would like to insert, you know, a true freshman like the old days, you know, used to always have a true freshman on start on a Sunday. You know, he would then work his way into Saturday starter, then he'd work his way into Friday, or you bring a true freshman in and he's a Tuesday midweek. He's a Tuesday midweek starter, works himself into the weekend rotation. You don't see that a whole lot anymore, but I think partially why you don't see that is because the amount of money that college coaches are making nowadays in baseball, it's kind of a win now. Baseball used to never really be that way. It's gotten more into the football and basketball stuff. It's win, and you got X amount of years to do it at certain programs, and if you don't, then you're on the street looking for a job. But I think the impact on transfers is going to be huge too, because you bring in this freshman that needs to play, and then all of a sudden somebody so-and-so hits the transfer portal and he has history in college baseball. Well, why wouldn't you go out and get that guy? But I do also think the good players and the good programs, they want to be surrounded by, you know, if I'm the best high school player, I want to be surrounded and challenged by the best player. And so I think that's a lot going into recruiting too, is I don't want the guy that wants to come into Nevada and play right away and just so he can get his for 3 years. That scares me. I don't think you build programs that way. And I don't think your program is going to be very good. I think you want the guy like Garrett Cole, who's willing to give back money as a junior scholarship wise. So you can go out and get two more guys to complement Garrett. And then so your team can go to Omaha and be really good. I think those are the things that you're looking for in players.
Let me follow up on that. I was not aware of that. So this is when you were at UCLA and Garrett Cole was one of the starters at UCLA. So he gave back scholarship money in order to help bring in someone. Elaborate on that more.
Yeah. So, you know, it's always baseball is unique. And as you know, just as well as I do, you know, so baseball is unique because we got the draft. No other program deals with the draft. There's nobody in basketball. There's nobody in football. There's nobody in softball. You know, you recruit the guy, he's coming to school for the most part. You know, we have to juggle the draft. We have to juggle numbers. So our 11-7 scholarships, maybe 12-8, and then it gets down to 10-8 because 10 guys signed. You know, and that was the case at a little bit at UCLA. In one draft year, we lost Austin Hedges, Max Fried, and Lucas Giolito all in the draft. You know, so now you went from 65% to each guy. Now you're standing there with almost two scholarships in your hand on July 1. And you're like, okay, now what do I do with them? Now they all signed for $3+ million. So, okay, no harm, no foul. You get it. You understand it. But going back to Garrett, you know, I just so happened to be there and be part of this journey with Coach. But, you know, Garrett walked into John's office and they talked and Garrett wanted to go to Omaha. They just lost the national championship game the year before I got there in 2010 and they wanted to go back to Omaha. And so he took less money as a junior scholarship wise, so we can go out and get one or two more guys. And I think that speaks volumes to him as a person and a competitor, that the team was bigger than himself. And there's been a handful of guys at UCLA when I was there that did that. I mean, there's guys that winning culture was so instilled in them, they just wanted to win. You know, whether it was a guy that signed for 25% and then he gave it back, you know, once he got to UCLA, because it just so happened to work out that way. And then all of a sudden you go get another guy for 25% and we win a national championship in 2013. That happened as well. And I think it just speaks volumes to kids. You don't see that much anymore. You know, you don't see that in kids.
Since you just mentioned the draft, I wanted to get your opinion on this as well. For, geez, 50, 60, 70 years now, Major League Baseball draft was in June. This year, it's going to be in July. So it's 1 month later. How will pushing the draft back 1 month impact college baseball and what decisions college baseball coaches like yourself have to make?
This is just part of the conflict in college baseball or college athletics, I think, is what's good for this person isn't always good for this person. You're trying to make everybody happy, and you're never going to make everybody happy, right? There's the saying, if you want to make everybody happy, go sell ice cream. You know, that's kind of the saying. But I think if you're in Omaha where you want to be, I think you'd love the draft in July. If you're in a super regional or even a regional, I think it's great. I think for those 64 teams that are playing in June, I think the draft being in July is fantastic. I think why? Because it limits distractions. There's no distractions. I mean, you saw the video a few years ago where Stanford's playing in super regional and Coach Esker is congratulating the guy on deck because he just went in the first round. That's hard. That's hard for a coach. It's hard to separate that, but it's also not fair to the kid to enjoy the process of the draft. I mean, it's a once in a lifetime deal. So you want to have the kids and the families enjoy it. And I remember, you know, we're at UCLA and we're getting ready to play TCU in 2012 in the Supers. And on Thursday at practice is the draft going on, you know, so you got, and the first round was over, you know, so now you're in rounds like 3 to 10 or whatever, 3 to 11, whatever it was. And now you're wondering if this guy's going to go, if this guy's not going to go. And I'll tell you another story is in 2013, Adam Plutko, who was the College World Series MVP that year, Adam Plutko was a sixth rounder out of high school, came to school, and we're in the super regional. And so he turned out $1 million and we're in a super regional at Cal State Fullerton. And the draft is going on his start day. It's Friday. The draft is going on. He doesn't go where he was told he's going to go. So he was told he's going to be in rounds X to X. The draft ends and I'm sitting in my hotel room and I'm like, oh my gosh, Plutko didn't go. Adam didn't go in a draft. So now as a coach, how is this 21-year-old kid going to, you know, compartmentalize this whole thing and go, I got to go out and pitch. And man, sure enough, did he go, he went out there and he's so mature and he went out there and he probably pitched a game of his life, you know, in terms of, I mean, he had a lot of good ones, but he separated it and he ended up going in the next day in the 11th round. You know, I think, but all in all, I think it's a huge deal for college. I think it's great. I think it's good for them, for everybody.
I'm with you. I love that it's in July. I wish that there was no Major League Baseball games on at least day one of the draft. I wish that it could just be, you know, just a Monday or whatever, no Major League Baseball games. So the entire baseball focus can be on these 30 first round draft picks.
Yeah. I mean, I think that would be pretty cool. But as we know, you know, I think Major League Baseball's tried to make it a huge deal. And you don't get the following a little bit from just the public. You just don't, because I think partially is there's so many rounds, mm-hmm. You know, but I also think the other thing is this is another sport too, where in every other sport, they go straight to the NBA or straight to the NFL, straight to the WNBA. Our guys go back down mm-hmm. to the AZL. Mm-hmm. They go back to short season. I mean, they go from working their way up from high school into the premier college class, and then they take a huge step down. And I just say a step down just from amenities and different things. And they're in the middle of nowhere. They're in certain league with the humidity and they've never heard of before. And like, whoa, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, and then they got to work their way back up. So it's kind of they ride a roller coaster a little bit. You know, I think baseball, that's why I think it is so unique. And I don't think any other coach deals with it with the roller coaster that we do. And so the way college coaches and programs go about this thing is really good. It's a credit to college baseball, I think, in general.
I want to also ask you about two-way players. The day that we're recording this, Shohei Ohtani had another start. He got the victory. He leads Major League Baseball in home runs. He's also a starting pitcher. We just played Air Force, where they had a freshman, Paul Skeens, who was the closer one game. He's the DH. He's the catcher another game. What are your thoughts on if someone wants to play two ways at Nevada, what's you and your coaching staff's philosophy about how to recruit them and how to be able to use a potential two-way player?
Yeah, I think it's great. I think it's really hard to do, but I think it's really good. I mean, we had Trent Brooks here that did it my first year in 2016. He was our Sunday starter, played right field. He was a Mountain West Conference Player of the year before in 15. I think just how you manage him is different. You know, you got to manage him a little more, a little more carefully just because of the throwing aspect. You know, it's like with Trenton, all we did. So he never threw from the outfield. He never took infield, outfield. He always did his throwing program with the pitchers, then would end up joining us in whatever team offense phase or base running phase or whatever we end up being. But he would never really throw. All his throwing program stuff was done with the pitchers. I played with a guy in 2004, Jason Vargas, that was a two-way player. You know, ended up pitching 13 or 14 years in the big leagues. You know, but he was strictly a DH, so it was a little different. I think he played right field one or two games at Cal Poly. Actually, I think that's one of the only two games he played really in the field. We had a senior first baseman, so he didn't play there, and we had a pretty experienced outfield. But he DH'd primarily and was our Sunday starter. So his throwing was a little different. You know, he did all his throwing with Buck, and then he would just come in and take BP. I don't even think he knew the offensive signs, but he wasn't paid to do anything but hit or throw anyways. So it worked out and he loved it too. But I welcome it. I think it's great. I think it goes back to the Sandlot days. I think it goes back to, you know, you just play. But the problem is nowadays is everybody, there's so many things out there that everybody, you know, they think you got to be so good at one thing to be any good. And I completely disagree with that. You know, it's like, my 7-year-old yesterday, we're at the park and my 7-year-old asked me, Dad, I want to throw a curveball. And I'm like, what in the heck are you talking about? Like, where did you pick that up at? Where? I don't understand where that went. And so I think partly how you change it is probably in your own home a little bit. You've changed society's thinking a little bit just based on your own house. And you hope that carries over to friends and everybody else. But we welcome it. I would love it. Sharks came in here as a two-way guy. And eventually he walked in and he said, hey, I don't want to hit anymore. I'm just going to focus on pitching. I think it's really hard. I think it's tough, you know, because now it's hard enough to be really good at one thing. Now you got to be really good at two things. So I think it's tough. I think it takes a special player, but I would love it. Come on. When you go to the grocery store, 2-for-1 deal, I'd love to get a pitcher and a position player on one scholarship instead of divvying out 2 or 3 to get 2 guys.
Yeah, I can understand that. All right. Last topic for this week is Trevor Bauer. We mentioned Garrett Cole earlier. You've known Trevor for a very long time and he's a guy who he's always in the news, whether it's pitching or whether it's him showing video of Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe not, like peeking to see what the signs are, then his whole thing with the sword and his thing with the eye. Let's start with the Trevor Bauer that you knew as a college student. How much is the Trevor Bauer that we see on TV and on Twitter? How would you compare that to the 18 to 21-year-old Trevor Bauer?
You know, I think Trevor is one of the most misunderstood people in baseball. You know, and you talk to guys that have been around him a while in professional baseball, and I think a lot of them would agree with that statement. But, man, I mean, I just tell you, the Trevor that I knew in 18, and we actually talked about 6 months ago. My sister actually interviewed for his company. So I just actually sent him a text and was like, hey, can you just – I'm not asking you for the job. I'm just saying, hey, just make sure – you know, see if you can get her an interview at least. And she actually interviewed, and that was the last time we spoke. But, you know, the Trevor I knew in 2011 was super competitive, super detailed in everything he did. Everything mattered. And I think he's still the same guy. I think he's still the same guy. But what I do think he's doing is he's bringing a different, and I think that's what he's trying to do, is bringing a different culture into Major League Baseball. You can still have fun and be competitive. And you can still have fun and go about your work. You can still have fun and celebrate. It's okay that you hit a home run and celebrate. I think the one thing that Tatis was doing, you and I talked about this, was he didn't make it towards Trevor Bauer per se. He didn't make it towards the Dodgers dugout per se. He was celebrating with his own team. And, you know, talking to you a little bit, you guys kind of opened my eyes a little bit too, is Babe Ruth did it, right? As you said, back when he played. I mean, it's no different. So at some point, baseball changed to where you couldn't do it. But every other sport celebrates. You know, guys dunk, guys hit a three, guys make a sack. So I guess it's the new wave of baseball. I wasn't taught that way. So it's a little tough at times to watch. But I think you know, and you sent the article to me, a Trevor story. And what Trevor said is, baseball is such a difficult game. When you have success, why can't you celebrate it? As long as it's not showing up somebody else. And I think that's what these guys are trying to do. And I think Trevor's doing a great job of it. And I think the Dodgers in general, you look at the Dodgers and you follow the Dodgers, I mean, those guys have so much fun playing. They're still competitive. They still go about their work the right way. I think it's really hard for college age kids to do that, because the professionalism and the discipline is probably the better word, is how disciplined can you be while doing that? Justin Turner's 36 years old and is about as disciplined as anybody else on that team. And Trevor Bauer doing his work. I mean, if you guys think that Trevor Bauer's not getting his work in days 1 through 4, you are certainly mistaken. And if you don't think Trevor Bauer wants to go out and pitch 7 shutout innings, you are certainly mistaken as well. He's as competitive as anybody else I've ever been around.
I was actually looking at the numbers yesterday. And I know this is different college baseball to Major League Baseball, but right now the league-wide batting average in the majors is .232. That is the average in Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. That's how hard it is to hit right now. So, and then a home run is hit 3% of the time. So 23% of the time you get a hit and 3% of the time you get a home run. It's hard. It's really hard. But one last thought, actually, when it comes to sign stealing, and we could do an entire podcast about sign stealing and whether you're peeking at the catcher, but I want to bring it up this way for Marco Valenzuela, for your catchers. What's the message to them about make sure that you put the glove a certain way, or you don't set up too soon, or that you vary things so that if somebody is going to peek, they still can't know what's coming?
Yeah, you know, and you know college baseball, right? I mean, sign stealing is completely a part of it. I mean, from the players to the coaches to the base coaches, I mean, if a catcher sets up early, then we're going to call something. You know, if he sets up a different way on a breaking ball versus a fastball, we're going to yell it out. I mean, and, you know, San Diego State's just as good at it as anybody else. So that – in college baseball, it's a little different. I think we just try to, you know, now we try to do it in the fall, you know, so we do it against our own guys in the fall. There again, it's part of being competitive, to where I selfishly, as now I remove the head coach hat, I'm the position player coach. So I want our guys to have success against the pitcher. So I'm going to tell them what's coming, but it's also to give them awareness on what's going to go down when we play somebody else. Mm-hmm. But I think the message is just to make sure that you're doing your part. And that part of that starts in your catch play from a pitching standpoint, or your bullpens. I think that's a lot of it, is how you go about it. Are we putting our glove down where it should be from a catching standpoint? Are you still peeking, you know, is the catcher still looking up at the hitter's eyes just to make sure he doesn't have wandering eyes? And I think it even goes further down to first base, which is forgotten too. The runner takes his lead. You know, the runner can look into the catcher as well. And that's something, now I think it's a little dangerous, especially if you got a ball in hand type of pitcher from the stretch versus a ball and glove, right? Because the ball in hand, you can pick a lot earlier than the ball and glove. So I think that's something too. And then of course you got second base. I mean, you see the guys in the big leagues doing it all the time. And I think the other thing is if we don't think the big league guys are picking pitches, we are mistaken big time, because those guys, like you said, the major league average is hitting 230. And Tulo and I had this conversation a few weeks ago is, you know, strikeouts are up, home runs are, I don't know if home runs are up or not, but there's more home runs and more strikeouts. And his only comment was, well, everybody's 97 to 100 miles an hour now. That wasn't the case 15 years ago in Major League Baseball. There is no off day. There is no rest day. There is no, God, I get a chance to get the good feeling back today. We're playing X. And everybody's 95 to 100. It's as hard to hit Major League Baseball right now as it's ever been.
Yeah, it sure is. The whole like, oh, the fifth starter throws 88. Not anymore. Let's get the starting pitcher out of the game. All right, well, the next dude coming out of the bullpen throws harder with a nastier slider.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, there used to be probably the AL East was okay going through, you know, I think the AL East is one of the toughest leagues, right? We all know that, but everybody on the West is throwing just as hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think hitters are incredible at the major league level. I think the eyesight, I think the ability to hit, I think the ability to take, you can definitely argue the best athletes, or maybe not athletes, but the best, I don't know how I would word it, the vision, controlled aggression, maybe the best in any sport. I mean, really, I think they are. I mean, I watch it daily. You know, it's like, wow, how did you, that slider was 92. Well, the slider's 92 and it's on two planes and then the fastball is 98. And you're like, whoa, how do you do that? And then it takes me back to why I never played professional baseball. So it's good. This game is very, very humbling.
Yes. All right, TJ. Good stuff as always. I like it. Again, congratulations on 2 out of 3 over Air Force. Big weekend. This one against the Aztecs and the next one against UNLV. Go get them. Thanks for your time.
Awesome. Thanks, Josh.
Once again, that is Nevada head coach TJ Bruce. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to come back and we're going to visit with catcher Marco Valenzuela to talk a little bit more about his background and also this weekend against San Diego State. This is Howling with the Pack.
The Lexus ES is stolen, hijacked from dreams, taken from the souls of artists. We confess, we stole everything we could from everything we've ever mastered and put it into the Lexus ES 350, ES300H, and first ever ESF Sport with standard Lexus Safety System Plus. See Dolan Lexus.
Not a substitute for safe and attentive driving. See owner's manual for details and limitations.
Episode 7 of Howling with the Pack continues. Once again, I'm your host, Josh Sushan, and we bring in our second guest for this week, episode 7. He is Marco Valenzuela. He is a fifth-year senior. He has been the primary catcher for the Wolfpack since he began as a freshman 5 years ago. He's from Redondo Beach, and Marco and his teammates will be taking on San Diego State this weekend. Marco, thanks for joining the Howling with the Pack podcast. It's good to learn more about you.
Yeah, glad to be here. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
All right, so I want to start with you. We're going to cover a number of topics, but I want to start with you with where TJ and I just ended our discussion, and that was about stealing signs, which whether it's college baseball or the major leagues, this has long been a source of controversy about what's allowed and what's an unwritten rule. And it's back in the news because Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe he was peeking out of the corner of his eye to see what pitch was coming or the location against Trevor Bauer. But for you as a catcher, tell us some of the things that you do in order to try to prevent somebody stealing the signs for you and your team.
I think a lot of it for me as a catcher, especially, is first of all, it's a lot about covering up, especially in a squat when you're giving signs. And as far as Tatis goes, I do look at the batters sometimes and kind of like if they look back, they're looking straight back at me. So I know that they're looking and they kind of just go like, all right, we're not going to do that again, right?
Have you ever like caught somebody and said like, no, that's not how it works or anything like that?
I've definitely caught a few guys looking back, and I think they don't expect me to be looking back at them sometimes. And it's not like a verbal exchange most of the time. It's more of like a, okay, all right, can't do that anymore or shouldn't. And if it does happen, then I just kind of wait and like, all right, you can look at the picture now.
Uh-huh.
But it's never gotten, thankfully I'm not a super like outspoken guy that'll go out and get in your face about it. But yeah, there's definitely things you got to do as a catcher, especially in a gritty conference like the Mountain West, where they're always trying to steal signs. We're always beating up on each other. You got to take a little more precautions with how you're going about things. So it's fun. It's an interesting part of the game. And I think it's always going to be a part of the game. And I think people that are seeing it in the MLB, especially on TV now, are saying like, oh, why is he doing that and all that stuff. But I think they don't realize there's always a way to get that extra edge on your opponent. And I think it's great that it's in the game still, but obviously in the right way, of course. But
yeah, so with your setup as a catcher, most of the time we just think about the runner at second, and that's when you go through different signs. But how conscious are you of a runner at first and a runner at third, and where you have to position your legs in order to make sure that they can't see and then relay it to the hitter?
I think it's a lot of it is closing up, especially in that primary stance where I'm kind of in that squat with my hand in between my legs. I cover my glove up on my left side. So I'm more worried about the base coaches than anything, because they're the guys that are really trying to look in and steal signs. The base runner is not so much, I think, especially even at first base. And then second base, obviously, we have taps and other things we can go to that are a little more complex, so we don't have to worry so much about hiding things. But that's it as far as that goes.
How often do you change the signs through the course of a game? Is it every inning, every other inning? Is it based on when you think they might be paying attention? Is it when a new pitcher comes in? Or how often do you change sort of the signs?
It depends. It could be all of those things. I think we've gone through whole games without changing signs before, or we've gone every inning we have to change because we feel like they're catching on to something, or a pitcher's more comfortable that's coming out of the pen with a different set of signs. And I think as a catcher, especially, you just got to adapt to whatever the pitchers want and whatever everyone else is comfortable with. So at the bottom line, we just have to be on the same page. And if that takes, we do signs and maybe the other team gets them, it doesn't really matter. We just got to be on the same page.
Yeah. When a new reliever comes in, is that one of the last things that you discuss just to remind him this is the indicator, or it's, you know, the first sign or the second or whatever different complex thing you guys do?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the main things that we talk about. They come in, obviously, taking the ball from the last guy. And that's like the first thing is like, look, this is what we're doing. Let's be on the same page with it. If you want to change it, let me know. But this is what we're at, and let's get going.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking of get going, I want to talk to you about this weekend against San Diego State. But before, let's kind of set the tone. Let's go back to 2018. That's the year the Wolfpack won the regular season title. What are some of your just biggest memories, things that you'll always just cherish about what it was like winning that regular season title?
I think just the whole season in general. I think we were a very, very tight team. I think we had a lot of fun together, but mostly we just played hard and we got after it and we didn't care what anybody else thought. And it was us against everybody else. And especially the one thing that comes into my mind, obviously, is the game we clinched it and Dalton Gomez on the mound, I believe, and he threw 8 innings of great baseball. And then I wasn't catching that day, but watching the whole game unfold against San Diego State, who was second place at the time. And it was like the last series of the whole season. And it was like a ton of people in the stands and it was big crowds and all that stuff. It was just great. I think it's one of those things where like you're trying to think about it, but it's all super hazy because it all just happens so fast. But it was great. I still talk to guys on the team that have graduated. I'm still living with a couple of them here. Mm-hmm. So it's stuff you never forget. Like you'll forget some details, but there's always like some weird stories that you'll remember on some Friday night game or some practice that didn't go well. And we ran a lot and we're all just like mad at each other and stuff like that. But it's always, I mean, you'll have those moments with those teams, but it was just really fun. I think just winning.
And that was a year where you guys didn't necessarily get off to the best start, right? And then you guys really rallied at the end. What was that like when things came together at the end of the season?
It's good. I mean, it's one of those things where you work so hard to get to that point where you're just going out and playing and not worrying about results, or you're not worrying about the signs and if you're going to get them right and stuff like that. And I think it took us a while. And even this season, you can kind of tell it took us a while to get into that rhythm of just playing the game the right way and not worrying about doing things wrong and just trusting our teammates and trusting the work that we've put in and just going after the other guys. So.
Yeah. Media people like me always like to, is it similar this year's team to that team or whatever, but you know, this year's team, you dug yourselves a hole. Now you've started to come out of it. You're back to 500. You're 3.5 games out of first going into this weekend against the first place team. Just give me the player's perspective on just the confidence that you guys are feeling, knowing that you guys got a ton of work to do, but at least you have an opportunity here the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I think a lot of us just understand, like, it's all up to us, whatever happens. No one else has control over what goes on except for us, especially these next couple of weeks with San Diego. Like you said, we get a sweep or whatever, we gain some games up on them. And then UNLV, who I believe is in second place right now, and then next week when they come out here. And I think we have everything in front of us. And I think we just got to take it one day at a time with practice today and with everything leading up to this weekend. I think the task is daunting, but I don't think any of us are scared of the challenge. I think we're ready to go, especially this older group of guys that we do have, I think are ready for it. And I'm excited. I'm excited to see how we show up. And I know how we would like to show up, obviously, but you never know. It's baseball. Anyone can win on any day.
This year's format of the schedule has been so unique. Instead of playing a Friday game, a Saturday game, a Sunday game, it's been a doubleheader, and then you turn around and play a single game. And there was one time that you caught both ends of the doubleheader. For the most part, though, you've caught game one and game three. But just for you and your teammates, describe what it's been like playing essentially three games, 27 innings in 27 hours.
I think a lot of it is testing our mental toughness and our mental side of the game, and also the physical side of taking care of our bodies. I think that's been more apparent this year than any year, especially with me as a catcher and Matt, who's been catching a lot too, and me catching that doubleheader. It's tough on the legs and on the arm and on the entire body. And I think a lot of us have realized, like, maybe we need to start doing a little more work on our bodies and trying to keep up with hydration, especially with being out in the sun all day and stuff like that. I think a lot of the priority hasn't shifted. It's just the other things are becoming more apparent and more of a priority than they have been in the past, just because like you said, three games in 2 days is not easy. And us having to do it for every conference weekend, and we have three more of them now, is tough. Or is it three more?
Yeah, no, I think it's four more, because it's because we got San Diego State, and then it's UNLV, and then there's still Fresno State and San Jose State.
And
yeah,
San Jose.
Yeah, so there's four more. So, I mean, the good news is you still have a chance to catch the Aztecs. The bad news is you're running out of time, but I think that's what makes the games this weekend fun, is that there's this urgency. Since you just played San Diego State a few weeks ago, and that was a day where you lose game one, but then you come back and you win game two, come from behind victory and you win game three. Their offense is so good. I think they still lead the nation in batting average. From your perspective as a catcher, like, what's it like just kind of game planning against a team that hits so well?
It's just limiting mistakes, especially when you're in the head of the count. They're really good. That team is really good at hitting off speed up in the zone or anything that you leave up, especially, Rudick and Fine and those guys that are having really good years. I think it's just with our pitching, especially, we just got to get ahead early and execute our spots, and we'll be in a good spot. Like you saw in that Sunday game, we kind of held them to a lot less of what they think they should get against us, which is nice. That, and especially this last weekend at Air Force is a brutal place to play out with the wind blowing everywhere. Even 2 years ago, last time we were there, the game score, I think we won like 24-15 or something like that. And it was just, like, we were up 24-6 at one point, and then they just keep scoring and scoring. And that place is just a launching pad. But it's just like realizing, especially too, that even when we're down, we're not out of it. It's the Mountain West. Like, everyone scores a bunch of runs. Like, the hitting, obviously, with San Diego State and us, like, we are starting to hit our groove, and they've always been good all season. So I think it's just with them, it's trying to get ahead and stay away from their big bats and trying to keep the ball down and stuff like that. And I think, yeah, just going forward, just executing our game plan pitching wise is really important.
Well, the games will be played at Pacoli Park and like just about all sporting venues throughout the United States. There's cardboard cutouts. So tell us the story of the, not one, but the two cardboard cutouts of you from behind home plate and when you first saw them and what the story is behind your cutouts.
Yeah. I was kind of blindsided by those. Actually, my mom didn't even tell me about them. She said she bought them as a surprise, and they were a surprise. It was so there's one back there. I'm not even sure how old I am. I'm a baby pictured, big ears, bald head back there. And then the other one is me catching when I was, I think I told you I was 11 or 12 with the long flowing hair. Just ridiculous that I had that haircut. But I don't know. It's funny, like just looking back, especially like not knowing where my career is going to go and kind of just seeing where I started as a catcher and going all the way through here, especially through my years here at Nevada. I think it's like just a thing to like remind me about how appreciative I am of the game and of this university, of being able to play here this long and get that extra year to finish my career here, and just appreciation from my parents and just having them, like, even though they aren't able to come, I'm from Southern California, so my parents aren't able to come to all the games, but having those cutouts of like reminders of little baby me and little catcher me back there, just like, because I feel like that's how they see me still sometimes. And so the fact that I'm graduating and moving on with my life or still playing, whatever it may be, I think is, it's bittersweet for sure.
Well, that's never going to change. Your parents are always going to think of you as a 12-year-old. Trust me from
experience. Oh, yeah.
When did you start catching? And then when did you realize this is the position for me? Because it's a position like none other. It's such a physical and mental grind. When did you know about catching?
I think I started like mainly catching in probably about fifth or sixth grade. I think sixth grade, mostly because I was the one kid that just was like, yeah, I'll catch whatever. Cause no one wants to be in a squat for, and with the gear and stuff. But I was just the kid that I guess just said yes, turned out to be pretty good at it and just carried it on. And then, yeah, I still played other positions. I still pitched until like seventh, eighth grade. And I would play like first base or third base and stuff like that. But as soon as high school hit, I don't think I played a single inning at any other position all the way through 4 years of high school. And I caught almost every game. I think there may be like maybe three or four games out of my high school career that I didn't play that I was catching. So yeah, it's just kind of like what it was. I think I just found my niche. I found what I was good at and I just stuck with it and just got better. So
I'm going to make fun of your coach a little bit here because he's good at telling a story, but he forgets the details quite often about them. But what he was telling me about you is that he said that the main thing that he said was that that there was a scout that he knew that recommended you. And TJ couldn't remember if he saw you once or if he didn't see you at all, if it was just based on trust of this scout. And this scout said, you got to take this catcher, Marco. He's really good. Let's see if your memory's better about how often the Nevada coaching staff saw you and what led you to the Wolfpack.
Yeah, that's a funny, it was my senior year. So I wasn't really recruited much out of high school, which obviously I wasn't happy about, but things worked out. But yeah, I think the scout's name was Todd Gugiana. He's the area scout, I think, for the Rangers in my area in Southern California. And I've always played with him. He helped around in my high school and he's seen me play a bunch. And I guess he was at a game and was videoing me and Nevada needed a catcher, I guess. And he sent video to TJ. And eventually I think Coach Silverman came down and saw me. And then I would get calls from him and TJ. And like, it was a pretty quick turnaround between the first time I was contacted by them and when I went up to visit, ended up committing right after the visit. I think like it was in beginning of the season in like March. And then by April, beginning of April, I went up to Nevada, visited the campus, saw a couple games and decided this was the place for me.
especially as a Southern California kid from Redondo Beach. I don't know if you'd ever been to Reno before, but when you see mountains and you see snow, you know, what are you thinking about this potential new place to live and go to school?
Coming in, I knew it snowed, but that first year was definitely a shock. I think it started snowing in November and it didn't stop snowing until this time, which is crazy because I'd never see snow. It's always 70 and sunny in Southern California. So it's tough, like having to wear like two layers of sleeves and hand warmers just to go out to practice, and having to shovel snow off the field and still practice the same day was like mind-boggling, because as soon as a drop of rain hits the ground in Southern California, the world ends, you know? So it was funny. It was crazy just having to go through that and just realizing, especially with the altitude and the temperature, like you're waking up in the morning for weights and it's like 20 degrees and you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Why am I here? I'm coming from Southern California. But it definitely toughened me up, I think. And I'm glad I went through it, because it opens you up to so many more challenges and it tests yourself. And obviously Reno's a great place and I love it here. And I'm really glad I ended up here, but yeah, it took a while to get used to, for sure. It definitely took a while.
Let me close by following up on, you just used the phrase toughen me up. And I think that every time I interview TJ, at some point during the course of that interview, he uses the word tough, that he wants tough players. And he admits that it can be a tough place to play and that the coaching staff is tough, and all of that is by design. As you reflect here, as you're coming to the end of your 5 years with the Wolfpack, what would be reflections on just what it's meant and how you've grown as a player being in the Wolfpack baseball program?
I think it's shown me my limits and how my limits have exceeded what I've thought they were, especially with the mental side of baseball and how to deal with failure. And when coach is on my ass and he's yelling at everybody and we're all running and stuff and just bringing your teammates along and saying, we're just going to bear down and do it because this is what it takes to win. And just trying to learn from the culture that Coach Bruce is trying to get us all to believe in and to trust in it's been a journey. It's been a good journey of just more becoming a man and getting ready for the real world and realizing that nothing's going to be given to you and you got to work for everything you get. And that's mostly what I take away from this program, because they set this precedent of hard work and constantly trying to get better 1% every day. We talk about that a lot. And another quote that we've been talking about a lot is, I think Augie Garrido said this too, is the world treats winners different than it treats losers. Just taking that to heart and realizing that, like, look, you can't just go about things your own way. There's a recipe for success that obviously Coach Bruce has been a part of in the different programs he's been coaching and stuff like that. And I'm really glad that he's tried to bring that toughness and that mentality to this program. And it's really had a big impact on me. And after 5 years, I can pretty confidently say I have a good amount of self-motivation, and I think I have a good work ethic, and that's all a byproduct of the coaches that I've had, and Coach Bruce and even Coach Buck and Coach Abe, and back in the day with Coach Silverman too. I think it's really shaped me as a person going through. So I'm a little less nervous about going into the real world, you know. Uh-huh. Even though I've been a kid pretty much for 5 years, just showing up and playing the game of baseball and going to school, which is great. But yeah, I love it.
All right, Marco. I love it too. That's really good. That's a good spot to end it on. But the other thing too is you got some work to do on the field. So thanks for the reflection. But hey, have fun this weekend against San Diego State. This is when baseball gets really fun. These last 4 weeks. So you got a chance to keep playing for a long time based on how you do these next 4 weeks. So go get them this weekend.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Appreciate being on here. Thank you.
All right. Once again, that is senior catcher Marco Valenzuela. And that wraps up episode 7 of Howling with the Pack. I'm your host, Josh Sushan. We'll talk to you again next week.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.